People fixing the world.
Hello, and welcome to People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service. I'm Tom Coles, and over the last few months, I've made a couple of programmes about some possible high-tech solutions to a few of the world's problems. Most recently, about how balloons and satellites might be able to get internet access to more of the world's population.
Hey guys, we're going T60.
So we kind of have this big balloon launching robot.
Now, we're always asking you to email us with your ideas for world-fixing solutions. That email is peoplefixingtheworld@bbc.co.uk. And as I was making those programmes, we got an email from one of our listeners, a chap by the name of Ben Bach.
Hello, Tom.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. And you can hear me. That's fantastic.
And I called him up because, in a very charming and friendly way, Ben, who's a software developer based in Denmark, had a kind of gentle criticism of the programmes I've been working on.
It's great that we are focusing on these ideas that can give potential value in the future. But there's already some things that are happening that are actually really interesting that maybe the listeners don't know about. And even though they're not so satellites in the sky, but more down to earth, normal conventional solutions, then there is a lot of interesting things going on. So I felt like maybe I should just fling an email to this program and see what happens.
Those more down-to-earth solutions are things that Ben himself has been working on for about 10 years, things like recycling old computers and sending them to countries where they're really needed. And they revolve around an idea that really caught my imagination, something I'd never heard of before talking to him. It's called the Sneakernet.
So if we do not have an internet connection and we want to exchange data with each other, then there are so many different ways of still doing that. We can connect our phones with Bluetooth, we can copy something onto an SD card, and a lot would be familiar also with the fact that software used to be distributed by CD-ROMs or even by floppies. And this is, in fact, what can be called the Sneakernet, as a metaphor that a human is carrying the data, and the data is being carried by foot.
So the Sneakernet, a network where the data is being carried around by people and the shoes or sneakers on their feet. Obviously, carrying around data on a physical device, like a hard disk or SD card, is what everyone did before we had the internet, and it's never really gone away.
Hard drives and SD cards, they can fit so much data on so little physical space. I can really, you know, transfer enormous amounts of data compared to what we could achieve with a conventional internet connection. It's more the transmission time of the Sneakernet that we can say is a challenge.
Nearly half the world's population still can't access the internet. And while cell towers, balloons, or satellites may one day connect them, they can still benefit from the internet's wealth of knowledge in the meantime. So, around the world, people are travelling dusty tracks and muddy roads to transport some of the vast knowledge available online to places that are off the grid. And until recently, Ben worked for Learning Equality, a non-profit that creates education software that's designed for exactly that. But despite his knowledge of the area, Ben was reluctant to tell me too much about it.
I'm thinking a lot, Tom, that that it's so much better that you actually talk to some of the great folks that are like building the different projects.
And so that's what I did.
Basically, we had been traveling on the road pretty much non-stop for about 3 days.
This is Anish Mangal, who set off on this Sneakernet mission with a car full of equipment and a huge download of data from his home in McCloud Gang, a hill town high up in the Himalayas, right at the most northern edge of India.
Everywhere around us there were towering mountains, deep gorges, glaciers, and then we are traveling overnight and in the morning we enter this valley, which is apparently called Zanskar. And it's as if like somebody took a mallet and magically flattened a piece of land with rivers flowing everywhere, and all around, all you can see is like desolate high peaks. Even while sitting here, I close my eyes and imagine it is really a magical place.
This was back in 2018, and Anish was making the journey at the behest of a monk who lived in the valley.
He saw Zanskar Valley at the cusp of big changes.
Better roads and internet connections would soon be coming to this remote part of the world, and the monk wanted to prepare people.
And also like use it as a means to preserve and spread the beauty of their own culture.
So in the back of his car, Anish was carrying all the equipment you need to set up an offline Wi-Fi network, an oasis of connectivity in an area where the next best connection was a 2G phone signal that rarely worked. To do that, first you need to build a powerful Wi-Fi hotspot, one that would work in this brutal environment where a power supply could not be relied on.
Our final design ended up being a small solar panel and a few lithium-ion cells that were actually harvested from dead laptop batteries, and a very tiny Wi-Fi router, which could withstand like extreme temperatures from extreme heat to extreme cold, and home-brewed directional antennas that we made from tin cans and satellite TV dishes.
He brought a few friends with him, and together they set up 6 or 7 of these Wi-Fi stations, scattered around in the tiny hamlets. Then they had to find somewhere to put the box that would run the whole system and provide the content. They needed somewhere with a clear view of the valley.
So we kind of set it up on the roof of this 1,000-plus-year-old monastery.
To his slight surprise, it worked. And they'd done it all themselves, built from scratch in just a few weeks on a shoestring budget.
This mini PC cost around $200, and each mesh node was around $30. So like, I think it would come out to something less than $1,000 for the entire setup.
Now, a network like this is absolutely useless if there's nothing to read or watch on it. And this is where the Sneakernet comes in. Because before leaving home, Anish had downloaded a terabyte, that's 1,000 gigabytes, of information that is freely available on the internet, and put it onto that little box that ended up on the monastery. I'm going to pause here for a second, because a lot of the people that our emailer Ben thought deserved more attention were the people working behind the scenes who developed all the stuff that Anish downloaded for free. For a start, there's Kiwix.
So we basically bring internet content to people that have no access. We copy full entire websites, package them into a single file, which you can store on your phone or on your computer, and then you can browse it just as if you were online, except that you're not.
This is Stefan Collin-Méchon from Kiwix. The most popular website they hoover up, compress, and make work offline is Wikipedia. They're funded by the Wikimedia Foundation. But there's also the TED Talks, Project Gutenberg, that contains every single public domain book in existence, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Stefan says that Anish is one of about 1 million downloads a year, and they estimate that something like 3 or 4 million people use Kiwix in some way or another. Although, if you look at some of the ways it's being used, it's clear those numbers are likely to be a bit ballpark.
Human Rights Foundation was distributing copies of the Korean Wikipedia in North Korea, because then they figure it's better propaganda if it's just the real world. So they have those little flash drives that they lose literally on the street.
As well as the Kiwix files and local content like lectures by the Dalai Lama, Anish also took education software up to the valley. This used content from a US education website called Khan Academy, which has videos of lessons combined with interactive exercises that let you practice skills and get feedback.
So we started with the simple realization that something like Khan Academy wasn't available to the 2/3 of the world that was offline.
This is Jamie Alexander from Learning Equality, the nonprofit that made that software. He's also, as it happens, our emailer Ben's old boss.
And so we were putting into the hands of those who already had the most all of these great new tools and content and opportunities, and leaving further and further behind those who were disconnected and needed some of these new opportunities the most.
So that's a little snapshot of what was in that box, and I should just say that the last piece of the Sneakernet puzzle is a project called Internet in a Box, which basically lets you set up and install all those things and more on that mini computer that ended up on the monastery roof. back in the valley. And when they turned that system on, suddenly that remote community could connect to this vast wealth of information for free from any device that had a Wi-Fi connection. Interestingly, quite a lot of people had smartphones, as it happens, despite the lack of internet. So, how did they react?
I would like to say there was an expression of disbelief on their faces, and like, actually it was a very interesting reaction that I got. And it was more along the lines of, wow, no, this is pretty cool. Let's now start clicking around. Many times the first page that people would open would be the Wikipedia page of Zanskar itself. Find out probably how the world viewed them from the outside. Like, if you have this thing which contains information about everything, what information does it contain about Zanskar? And I think that was the initial node of curiosity.
But while they did end up using some of the Sneakernet content, if you think that this community was going to sit back and passively consume the world's information, then you'd be mistaken.
Like, we used the word initially, Sneakernet, carrying all this terabyte worth of data with us, which we thought would be extremely useful, and some parts of it were useful. But what really came out was that, okay, now they have access to this network and they have access to this technology, and ideas would start to arise in their heads. And what they really wanted to do was sharing stories of themselves and media that they would create.
So when he came back the next year in 2019, Anish took some more equipment to set up the things that the community now wanted.
So the request that was made to us was that, it would be really amazing if we could live stream events over this network. So if a festival is happening in a village, and if somebody sitting in another village could view a feed of it, that would be really cool. Things like, would it be possible to have a radio station?
Oh my chick chick. Oh my chick chick.
So he took microphones to the valley and set up a little radio station that you could pick up on the Wi-Fi. They got school kids to make radio jingles.
You don't tell my nanny knows Oscar chick.
Broadcast Buddhist prayers in the morning. And there was even a local stand-up comedian who broadcast some stuff. Now, the little network in the valley has had its ups and downs. It's broken a couple of times, and Anish has had to try and mend it remotely. But overall, he's certain that he's had a positive effect on that little community.
In that space and in that time, when I see this kind of engagement happening, I think something good of it will come down the line. Something good of it will manifest.
Okay, so that's one Sneakernet project, but there are hundreds more out there using all kinds of offline systems to do all kinds of things with varying degrees of success. Many of them are run by organisations like NGOs rather than passionate individuals like Anish. I don't have time here, unfortunately, to talk about them all. So in the rest of this programme, I'm going to tell you about two that really caught my attention. The first is a project in Bangladesh that's using the Sneakernet to fight disinformation. Fariha Mustafa works for Bibliothèque Sans Frontières, that's Libraries Without Borders.
When our car enters into the camp, it feels like we are driving, but you know, the shelters where these people are staying, it's never ending.
The project she helps to run uses a Sneakernet in a massive refugee camp, housing some of the more than 700,000 Rohingya refugees that are currently living in Bangladesh.
In the camp, there is like a lot of people, a lot of refugees living in a very limited area. So what's happening is, if a misinformation, you know, comes in, they start believing it without verifying the information.
Rumours, for example, about how COVID is being dealt with, spread like wildfire, causing tension in the refugee camp. What's more,
there is a lot of like social restriction and religious restriction. As a result, adolescent girls and young females are not allowed to come out of their houses. Basically, they don't come out at all. That's when Bibliothèque Sans Frontières comes in. We have our backpack.
A backpack that contains a bunch of tablet computers and something called an ideas cube, a similar thing to Anish's box. They upload some carefully selected videos from the World Health Organization and other trusted sources and head out into the refugee camp. Going from shelter to shelter, they stop, hand out the tablets, set up a server and run a short offline learning session.
During this pandemic, what our teams are doing is running activities on COVID-19 prevention measures and also how to deal with different overwhelming emotions.
So the videos teach the refugees the latest information on COVID and also how to do simple exercises to help with the anxiety of living stateless in a pandemic. Because the information is from trustworthy independent organisations on the internet, it helps to overcome the mistrust the refugees feel for what others in the camp are telling them. And they can get the information without leaving their shelters.
So it's very crucial that we use offline server where the real information reaches out to the community people.
The final thing that I want to tell you about is an education project that's running in Malawi. It uses a lot of the parts that we've heard about already. A sneaker net, a magic Wi-Fi box, and education software from Learning Equality, which in recent years has been improved to include all kinds of tracking, feedback, and personalization stuff. But before we hear from the people on the ground, I want to stop again for a second, just to look at the bigger picture. Because some projects like this work, and some just don't. They end up with dusty tablet computers sitting unused in backroom cupboards. Taskeen Adam is a research analyst with the EdTech Hub, who's been looking at how education systems have been responding to the COVID pandemic around the world.
A recent UNESCO report actually stated that 90% of countries are trying to make some attempt to support offline and remote learning opportunities. However, 31% of school children worldwide are not accessing learning through these forms.
Taskeen thinks that offline education projects can be useful, but a lot depends on whether the school kids have access to the right stuff, like computers in schools or, if the schools aren't open, tablets at home with a power supply to charge them on. Where these aren't available, education broadcasts for TV or radio might work better. And when these aren't available,
a better strategy would be to print out openly licensed materials and distribute these sort of workbooks to students.
So you have to look at what equipment the kids can access and fit the strategy to that. Often the answer is not tablets and offline magic boxes, but where these are available, Taskeen says that the interactive element, so the games, quizzes and performance monitoring, should lead to better results. However, even where offline learning systems are a good option, there are other things to take into account.
The one aspect I'd like to talk about here is the ability to curate content.
There are potential problems with a kind of educational imperialism, she says.
This content package is developed in the global north, and then you're trying to implement it in some global south country where that might not match. This is a really huge risk. I think what we need to do to avoid that is to promote locally generated content.
Finally, there's a general problem in this field with a lack of good evidence in order to say which kind of projects should be scaled up.
It's really hard to talk about scalability because evidence informs whether something should be scaled. So I can draw on a few studies or some anecdotal evidence. So for example, in Guatemala, there was a study done where Khan Academy content was rolled out and it was investigated as to whether this would improve learning outcomes for mathematics. And the study showed that actually there was improvement. There was 10% point increase in mathematics scores.
So there are good indications that in the right circumstances, offline education projects could work well. But Taskeen says their success or failure all comes down to the way the projects are implemented. It's the people who make it work, not the technology. People like Anish in India, Fariha in Bangladesh, and in Malawi.
Hello, I'm Francis Kyokwa. I'm a physics teacher at St. Michael's Girls Secondary School in Mangoji, Malawi. I've been a data collier for the World Librarian since 2017.
Francis transports data for his pupils. His shoes are the sneakers of the sneaker net, in a project called World Librarians. It's run by the University of Massachusetts in the US and a non-profit in Malawi called Shift IT. Here's how it works. First, rather than guess what the kids want to learn, the World Librarians Project is driven by demand.
The requests come from the teachers and the students.
So, for example, they've recently asked for more information about Macbeth by Shakespeare and the physics of powering machinery. Because the school hasn't got an internet connection, Francis then takes those requests and goes somewhere he can connect, so an internet cafe or somewhere with a good phone signal.
I, as a data courier, will forward the request to World Librarians through Twitter.
That's right, he tweets it, and they use Twitter because it's very low data use. Then, a team of researchers at the University of Massachusetts gets to work.
Those partners will search for the information and whatever we need that will be suitable for the lessons.
So, videos and interactive activities that can show the pupils how to do whatever it is they want to do.
And then they will send it through a Google Drive link.
Francis then goes back to the place he can get internet access and downloads a new module for their education software.
So this is the computer laboratory where the students will normally sit and study. So, yeah, here are the computers.
One of those computers is something called a Rachel. That's another of these clever little Wi-Fi boxes, this time made by a non-profit called World Possible. He uploads his new data onto it, and it's then broadcast out to the other computers in the lab.
The students will sit here and access the information from the Rachel device. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
What's going on here?
Actually, we're studying the...
We're going to have to leave Francis there to carry on his teaching, because that's all the Sneakernet projects we've got time for today. Before we go, I wanted to see what our emailer, Ben, thought of the episode, so I sent him an advanced copy.
Tom, that was an amazing episode, and hopefully also the listeners will feel inspired to try and look around for these technologies. They are available, and in the sense that they are open source, it means that anyone can play around with them. I hope that's also a little treat for the listener for after the show. I hope we'll meet again, perhaps offline.
So don't forget, if you've seen a project that could really help solve some of the world's problems in an imaginative way, then please do get in touch. You never know what might happen. The email again is peoplefixingtheworld@bbc.co.uk. Thanks for listening.